If it's happening now, we're talking about it. This is Hamilton Today with Scott Thompson on 900 CHML.
It is 3:49. It is 900 CHML. I'm Scott Thompson, Hamilton Today. Jump into the conversation. Love to hear from you. Send us a note, Scott Thompson at 900CHML.com. Phone lines always open, 905-645-3221. You can talk, you can text, you can leave us your last word. Hammerhead Trivia coming up after the 5 o'clock news. Blue Jays have announced that they have sent Anthony Bass, pitcher, down to the minors. He was supposed to catch the ceremonial first pitch tonight. That obviously not happened, and controversy with comments around the LGBTQ community earlier on in the week. Blue Jays have sent him to the minors. They have released him as a result of all of that. I'm sure we'll have more coming up at the top of the hour. We've been hearing more, and my goodness, we've been talking about the Russian invasion of Ukraine far too long. Initially, Russia thought this would take a few days, and here we are. And at length, we've talked about how Russia is reacting to this, the citizenry. How long are they going to put up with this? We're now hearing talk that Russia's elites, the money, the oligarchs, are growing weary of all of this and are starting to disagree with Putin's decisions. Let's bring in Arl Brown, professor of international relations, senior member of the Monk School of Global Affairs, University of Toronto, and with us now. Arl, thanks for the time. Hope you're well.
Thank you.
We have talked about this at length, Arl, about how Russians are reacting to all of this. And so far, Putin has managed to keep the lid on it. Is this just wishful thinking from the West, or are some of the elites in Russia starting to get weary of all of this?
It's difficult to tell. As you recall, I mentioned a number of times that dictatorships in Russia under Vladimir Putin is a dictatorship. Dictatorships tend to look very strong and stable until all of a sudden they're no longer strong and stable. So it's hard to predict because the tipping point is often very subtle and it comes from different kind of sources. Now, the oligarchs may indeed be unhappy. There is good reason for them to be unhappy. Their movements abroad have been severely restricted. Their wealth, some of which had been transferred abroad as insurance, has been endangered. But they do not have the capacity to remove Vladimir Putin. In the case of the military, they certainly have a great deal of force, but there's not a history of the military itself removing the leadership. So we have to see what's happening with the Siloviki, the secret services. And so far, there does not appear to be any breach in the support from the Siloviki with Vladimir Putin because they're very highly dependent on him. But it can change very quickly. And this is why we have to look at what is happening on the ground. We have to keep helping Ukraine. We have to make sure that Ukraine is given the tools to succeed on the ground. And that is the best insurance that we can have, that Vladimir Putin is defeated, even if he's not removed.
Obviously, the elites, the oligarchs, are concerned about their money. Are they losing it? Are they in fear of losing?
Undoubtedly, they are in fear of losing it because there is no independent system of law in Russia. There's no independent judiciary. So they know that whatever assets they have, those assets are vulnerable to the whims of Vladimir Putin. You could be a powerful, wealthy oligarch one day and then be prosecuted, jailed, like Khodorkovsky was on the orders of Vladimir Putin, and the judicial system will offer you no protection. So what happened in Russia was that oligarchs moved significant sums abroad, and they worked under the belief that those funds would be safe, that if the situation really deteriorated inside Russia, they could flee and they would have those assets. Well, now, thanks to much more rigorous actions, sanctions taken against Russia, those funds are not at least as secure as they were before. And the oligarchs know that. And also, since their movement is restricted, they cannot so easily flee and then access those funds. So undoubtedly, there is a great deal of concern. But that concern does not necessarily translate into an open revolt, because as long as Vladimir Putin has the loyalty of the Siloviki, as long as he controls the military, the oligarchs have virtually no way of really removing Vladimir Putin. And at the moment, Vladimir Putin still seems to operate on the basis that time is on his side, that the West will not sustain support for Ukraine, that he detects a tremendous amount of weakness in the Biden administration with good reason. He knows that the German chancellor has now provided many more armaments to Ukraine, but not anywhere close to what was expected, and particularly in rebuilding the German military, that had been very slow. Now, he probably is mistaken, and we have seen that Vladimir Putin may have been a clever tactician on occasion, but he's no strategist. And obviously, there has been a huge strategic miscalculation on the part of Vladimir Putin, but he continues. So we have to see actually what happens on the ground. And now we see signs that the offensive by Ukraine may have started. There are at least three areas where they're pushing forth. Slowly, they're shaping the battlefield. They are prodding, probing, testing. And each side claims some success, but these are early days. So we have to wait. And also we have to understand that in any military operation, if you look at the Allied operation, the landing in Europe after D-Day, there are setbacks. And there may well be setbacks for Ukraine, but if they can overall succeed, then Vladimir Putin could be defeated. And at that point, there may be all those other elements within the power establishment in Russia, what is called the power vertical, that will come to the conclusion that not only has Vladimir Putin been catastrophic and a tragedy for Ukraine, but actually he's a disaster for Russia as well.
Got less than a minute left here, Arl. Your thoughts on the dam destruction that we've seen. Do we know any more? Do we know anything more about what happened to it?
There are new reports from Norway and from some U.S. intelligence services leaked to the media that they detected some kind of explosion. If there was an explosion, and particularly if the explosion took place in the power plant, then it's highly unlikely that Ukraine could have done it. It is vastly more plausible that it was Russia. It begs the question, why would they do it? And if that turns out to be the case, and again, it's if, because we don't have all of the facts, it may have been partly miscalculation that they may have thought that they would have some kind of controlled explosion and wouldn't have devastation on this level. Because at the moment, even the Russians, Russian forces to the east of the Dnieper have suffered.
Arl Brown with us, professor of international relations and a senior member of the Monk School of Global Affairs at the University of Toronto, talking about the Russian invasion of Ukraine and where we are at this point. Arl, as always, thanks so much for the time. Be well.
Thank you for having me on.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.